Yesterday, we started with the words of Ananda to the Buddha, which the Buddha reiterates when he answers Ananda. These are the words. Formerly, I, O Ananda, as well as now, through abiding in emptiness, abide in the fullness thereof. And the Pali is sunyata viharena ananda etarahi bahulam viharamiti. The word bahulam stands for fullness, and it has been translated through abiding in emptiness. I now, as formerly, abide in the fullness thereof. Naturally, one thinks in terms of a fullness contained within emptiness, contained within shunyata. Look at it slightly amended. Through abiding in emptiness, I abide fully in emptiness, instead of in the fullness thereof. Abide completely in it. And then you remember that the rest of the discourse takes Ananda stage by stage through the material world, setting aside particular limited forms of matter and being attentive to a larger and a larger whole, then coming to Akasha, which we discussed, and Vijnana, and the deeper states of consciousness. And each time when the exposition is given, he ends it by saying, this, O Ananda, comes to be a true, not a mistaken, but an utterly purified realization of emptiness. And the words are evam pi esa ananda yatha buccha avipallattha parishuddha sunyata vakanti bhavati. Parishuddha, utterly purified, sunyata vakkan, realization of emptiness. Note the adjectives that are used. A true, not a mistaken, utterly purified realization of emptiness. Now, having gone through these stages, and he goes through the stages by relinquishing the previous stage, not clinging to it. And you remember, at each stage, the monk sees for himself that which went before and was put aside is now empty as far as his awareness of a profounder reality is concerned. And when he comes toward the end, he comes to this extraordinarily interesting statement. He attends to solitude, ekatta, translated as solitude here, but which also means, remember, unity or oneness, aloneness. This is very important, this word aloneness, because transcendentally aloneness is the totality. The individual being realizing ultimate reality in actual awareness, not discriminative consciousness, but in actual awareness, realizes aloneness, which is not being lonely, restricted to one's own self-consciousness. One has completely dissolved the barriers of self-consciousness. The isolatedness of self-consciousness is completely transcended. And then there is the aloneness, which is the total oneness, the one total reality. And this is the transcendent realization, no longer subject to time, space, which means to any sort of limitation, which the Buddha called touching nirvana with the body. Touching nirvana with the body, because nirvana as the absolute is invisible, unhearable, untouchable, and so forth. But nevertheless, he says, touching with the body, touching nirvana with the body, because this realization of nirvana is not yours by any manner or means. It is the total reality which comes to fruition in that mode of transcendent awareness through you, the individual. This is the extraordinary mystery. The infinite demonstrates its infinitude through the finite. Immortality demonstrates its immortality through you, the mortal. This is something, well, don't try to build a kind of a logical intellectual system about it. You can't do it. You can be it in mind and consciousness. Not the consciousness which is discriminative, that is to say, which knows in terms of I, the subject, know. That is the object which I know. The subject-object differentiation has disappeared. In consciousness, in awareness, that's why I use the term awareness. You see? So, and we come to the point where he talks of the solitude which is grounded on the concentration of mind, that is signless. And the signs were anicca, usually translated as impermanence, but which I suggested yesterday we would better translate as the relative. Nitya, nitya being the word for the absolute. and the absolute is not the opposite of the relative, whereas impermanence and permanence are true opposites comprised within a duality which one does not break through actually. But the absolute and the relative are not opposites to each other. The innumerable relatives that constitute existence are all subsumed wholly and completely in the absolute. That is why the absolute is not an opposite. It's the best possible word one can find. Infinite is another word. You see, the significance of those words, absolute or infinite, they represent the immeasurable. Everything else represents the measurable, the limited, the finite, the constrained. Here there is no constraint. And in the absence of that constraint, obviously awareness of that cannot mean consciousness discriminatively, because all discriminative consciousness is confined within the limitations of time-space and measurability. If you were to study the Rig Veda very carefully, and there are other things too which you can study, you will see how the god Varuna is represented as the measurer. He measured out the spaces. It means that that aspect of consciousness, which because of its confinement measures out everything, that means limits everything and functions only in terms of limitation. That's what Varuna represents. The same with the Greek Uranus, which we call, we pronounce it Uranus. Uranus, the measurer, the limiter, the confiner. So, this is signless, anicca, and it's anatta, without, it's not ultimate reality. Atta meaning ultimate reality. It's anatta. And it is dukkha. Dukkha, fundamentally, in this transcendental sense of being far from the infinite. And it is all in our own in our own consciousness, because we are in the state basically of ignorance. We haven't seen reality, and seen in this context means being reality in awareness. You can't see reality, because then it is an object of sight by me, a subject, and as long as that separation is there, that is not the ultimate seeing reality in terms of the supreme communion. So, dukkha, that is dukkha. And then, you recollect, he goes on to say that the monk comprehends thus, this concentration that is signless is affected and thought out. Very important point. Affected and thought out. But whatever is affected and thought out, that is impermanent. When the monk becomes conscious of experiencing this state of the signless, anicca, anatta, dukkha, the experiencing is in terms of what we here would call unconsciousness. It is an unknowing knowing. And the unknowing knowing means that in the deeps of mind, the utterly purified whole mind, the holy mind, you are that which you are seeing. You are that which you hear or touch or taste or smell, and so forth. This is a great mystery, unless and until it comes to you naturally, effortlessly. And in that, and afterwards, the mind will make constructs, mental constructs, interpreting that ineffable unity, the divine union, as the mystics call it. See, so when the mind does that, forms mental constructs, then the signless state is effected and thought out in order to talk about it. Otherwise you can't talk about it. You can't even think about it. You cannot remember it in the way that we remember any particular experience or object or event or whatever it is. You see? There are those who say that the Buddha was not concerned with anything transcendent, that he was concerned with and presented everything in terms of the individual man finding out for himself quite reasonably, logically, and so forth. But read the Brahmajala Suttas carefully, and the Buddha repeats again and again not to be known by mere logic. Mere logic. Particularly Aristotelian logic, but Aristotle was after his day. He was talking of the logic of his day, the five-step syllogism, not the three-step one. It's effected and thought out, but whatever is effected and thought out, naturally, changes. It is not, again, that word used is it is not permanent, nitya. It is not the absolute, it is the relative. And if it is the relative, therefore it is liable to undergo dissolution and change and fade away. Now comes the important part. When he knows this thus, sees this thus, his mind is freed from the, it's translated here, kanka, but I suggest that we translate asava as the exudation, the overflow or the spilling over of consciousness. And it, I believe this is a much better way of seeing it. And that is the literal meaning too of asava in this case. He's freed from the spilling over of his awareness into sense pleasures, into the becoming process. The ego wanting to assert itself and become this and become the other and so forth, and into the overflow of the ignorant state. The ignorant state meaning the state which is unaware of total reality. That is ignorance. And he goes on. He comprehends this perceiving is empty of the overflow of sense pleasures. Because when he sees this thus, he becomes freed of these three asavas. The kama asava, the spillover into sense pleasures, into becoming, into the ignorant state, the state of being unawake to total reality. And he sees now that this is empty of this canker, empty of ignorance, empty of becoming. And there is only this that is not emptiness, namely the six fields of sense, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and discursive thinking. The sixth field of sense, conditioned by life, grounded on this body itself. That is the inescapable thing whilst one is alive. And it's very important to bear this in mind. But note that this final stage, as taught by the Buddha himself regarding the doctrine of emptiness, sunya, regarding this, he says, thus, Ananda, this comes to be a true, not mistaken, utterly purified, the same adjectives he uses before, and in this last case, incomparably highest realization of emptiness. So now, the incomparably highest realization of emptiness is the realization of the emptiness of the overflow into sense pleasures, into becoming, into the state of ignorance, the state in which one is out of communion. So now, touching nirvana with the body, and living constantly in that state, which is the fruit of emptiness. The fruit of the realization of emptiness. And the fruit of the realization of emptiness is the utter freedom from sense pleasure, from becoming, the passion to become, and the state of non-communion, of being excommunicated from the absolute total reality. In the discourse, in the first volume of the Majjhima, where he's talking to Aggivesana, he says outright, and I, Aggivesana, compose my mind, calm it, and abide in that first fruit of concentration, which is the sunyata phala samadhi, the fruit of the emptiness. And because the Tathagata, the Holy One, realizes, completely realizes, by being in constant communion with reality, the emptiness, meaning, you remember, we mentioned this yesterday, the transparency of that state. Utterly transparent. The light is unhindered. It is all light. There is no darkness. He dwells constantly in that state. And Aggivesana tries to catch him out by saying, but do you grant that after the midday meal you fall asleep? And the Buddha replies, yes, Aggivesana, I have a little nap afterwards, but I go to sleep completely mindfully, Thereupon, Aggivesana gives up trying to outdo the Buddha. Now, how does this discourse end up, the last paragraph? Oh, just before I mention that, this incomparably highest, here we are, at the end he says, evam asa esa ananda yatha buccha avipallattha parisuddha utterly purified paramanut uttara. Incomparably highest, sunyata vakanti bhavati. Absolutely wonderful, really, the way it climaxes. You know, one finds that the discourses are difficult to read because of the repetitions. The Hammerklavier Sonata of Beethoven is very difficult to play. You've got to work very hard. You've got to be an absolute master. You've got to have the passion, the pure passion, that psychical energy within you, which characterizes the living organism, mind you, which, because you are sensible, intelligent, and care for that which is most worthwhile, that energy is directed wholly towards such realization. Just as your musician directs all his energies to the realization of transcendent beauty when he gives you immortal music. That one has to do for oneself. Don't say, I haven't got the energy. I'm not made that way. You, as a living organism, are the embodiment of the locked up energy of 10 to the power 28 atoms, one with 28 noughts after it. Now you work out the equation E equals mc squared in relation to that, and see what a atom bomb you are. Now, release that energy into this realization, and you will be, for the first time, purely human. A pure human, the happy creator. That's the meaning of human. We have no conception of that which lies before us and our possibilities. All right. So, I think there is justification for slightly amending that phrase, abiding in emptiness now as formerly, I abide in the fullness thereof. Amending in the fullness thereof, abide fully in the emptiness, completely, totally. You see, we must be free of this misconception, which easily comes up, that this fullness referred to is something contained in the emptiness. We think analogically. We go to a shop and buy a box of oranges. The box is a container. And if the oranges aren't there, we say in our common garden way, disregarding the fact that air is there, we say this box is empty. Then we put other objects inside this container. the oranges are the contained within the container. Now we say the box is full. Now we think of shunya. You see, this is the trouble about trying to think of things transcendental before we can think sensibly of things which are within our grasp. We think of things transcendental analogically with things that are anicca, which are measurable. Shunya is the immeasurable. Don't forget that. Where the immeasurable, where the transcendent is concerned, container and contained are an identity. Only when one understands, when one begins to understand that, has one glimmer of light in connection with that, then you will begin to understand the statement, samsara is nirvana, and nirvana is samsara. Container and contained in terms of transcendence are an identity, because neither container nor contained are measurable. It is a case of the complete transformation of your mode of awareness. But if you can feel this, if you don't let the brain jump up like a monkey and or like a puppy go yapping about this objection or that objection, this question or that question, if you just be quiet, then this receptive, responsive sensitivity, the mind, which is the all mind, will be allowed to function freely. It will not put up obstacles in the path of the light, which will enlighten you. So keep that in mind. Now, in this connection, there is a most valuable discourse, quite a short one, addressed to Sariputta. And it is called the Discourse on Complete Purity for Alms Gathering. The title leads you to expect something different, really, from what it is about. At one time, the Lord was staying near Rajagaha in the bamboo grove at the squirrel's feeding place. See, just these little touches make the thing come alive. You can picture it, can't you? Then the Venerable Sariputta, emerging from solitary meditation towards evening, approached the Lord. Having approached and greeted the Lord, he sat down at a respectful distance. Now remember, he had been meditating and he approached. The Lord spoke thus to the Venerable Sariputta as he was sitting down at a respectful distance. Your faculties are very bright, Sariputta. Your complexion very pure, very clear. In which abiding are you, Sariputta? Now abiding in the fullness thereof. Your faculties are very bright. People wonder, what is the meaning of this? Your faculties are very bright. When one is fully awake, all the senses function perfectly. You're really wide awake. You're all there. And in the case of an arhant, you are all there in a state of complete purity, complete transparency. And because of that, your complexion is very pure, very clear, in which deep state of communion are you? I'm putting it in more modern words. Sariputta, abiding fully in that state. And Sariputta answers, abiding in emptiness do I, revered sir, now abide fully in it. It is good, Sariputta, says the Lord, it is good. You, Sariputta, are now indeed abiding in fullness, in the abiding of great men. Now, we must understand, great here means those who are themselves the Tathagatas, the Buddhas, the Arahants, and such folk. They are the ones referred to as great men. Nothing measured here. As the Buddha himself has said, the Tathagata is untraceable, he is immeasurable, transcendent. Where transcendence is concerned, there are no comparisons. We know something about that in our own lives. If we have ever really loved, all comparison disappears where true love is concerned. Anybody who starts comparing love doesn't know the beginning of love. He can't even write the first letter L properly, although he may be there in L. It is good, Sariputta, for this is the abiding of great men. That is to say, emptiness. Therefore, Sariputta, if a monk should desire, may I now abide in fullness in the abiding in emptiness, that monk should consider thus. Now, here are the tests, the means by which one can know. And this is why this is so important. The monk should consider, on the road by which I entered the village for alms food, hence the title of the discourse, in which I walked for alms food, or on the road by which I left the village after walking for alms food, did I have there in my mind desire or attachment or aversion or confusion or sensory reaction in regard to material shapes cognizable by the eye? You see, if I was abiding in emptiness, I can test that by observing, by being mindful of the fact that as I walked through the village, was there any trace of desire, attachment, aversion, confusion, or sensory reaction, remember. The senses, of course, function insofar as they receive impressions. Sensory reaction in regard to material shapes cognizable by the eye. Then he repeats that. Then he says that if there had been, then an effort should be made to be free, to be released from those evil, unskilled states. But if there was no such reaction, then that monk, O Sariputta, with rapture and joy can forsake these ill states, training himself day and night in states that are skilled. And again, Sariputta, He repeats the same formula and applies it to sounds cognizable by the ear, smells cognizable by the nose, tastes, touches, and mental states cognizable by the mind. Now, if there was desire, attachment, etc., arising out of any of these stimuli, then we should get rid of those evil, unskilled states. But if there was no such reaction, there was complete purity, then the monk with rapture and joy, free of them, trains himself day and night in states that are skilled. And again, Sariputta, a monk should consider thus. Do I fully understand the five groups of grasping? Namely, rupa, shape or form. Don't restrict the meaning of rupa to body, to the physical body as we understand it. Rupa is a shape or a form. Any shape or form, a mental shape or form, an emotional one, an imaginary one, the working of the imagination, they're all shapes. You see? And they play a much greater part in our lives, especially those of us who are inclined to live the religious life, than physical shapes and forms. And of course it includes physical shapes also. So that's one. Then vedana, feeling. Feeling in its widest meaning, its all-inclusive meaning of sensations, of mental feelings. That's a curious thing to say. You know, in the Brahmajala Sutta, the Buddha refers at the end of it to these are the mental writings of people who feel that, this is the truth or that is the truth. And they say, they had an intuition. And that their intuition, of course, is absolutely true. Beware of intuition. Panya, insight, buddhi, is not mere intuition. Remember, Hitler had his intuitions. Torquay Mada and company had their intuitions. And all the most terrible devils who have strutted across the world stage, harming themselves and their fellow men, had their intuitions. Never mind the intuition. It may be good, it may not be good. It is a beginning, if you like, yes. So observe it. Panya, insight. Panya means unerring insight. And it is unerring because the mind is utterly free and, as the Buddha said, not liable to delusion. Then that is insight. If you want to call that intuitive perception, well, all right, use the word intuition. But be very careful of the misuse of the word intuition in connection with our daily life, and particularly with that aspect of it which is specifically concerned with the release of the religiousness which lies right at the bottom of our hearts, right at the center of our being. So be careful of that, you see? Feelings, therefore. And then sanya, thoughts, ideas, particular concepts. Sankhara, the pattern of concepts, the pattern of thinking, the thought process as it flows, the volitions, the plans, and so forth, and any sort of mental confection. I think confection is about as good a word as any in English in connection with sankhara, a very difficult word. Its root point, the most important point in connection with sankhara is this. It is that which is put together, a synthetic product, not a living integration, a mechanical synthesizing. This impression, that impression, this idea, that idea, these different desires, these different objects, and you synthesize the whole thing, and you synthesize it with a mind that is self-oriented, self-concerned, and desirous of fulfilling your own ambitions and so on. So beware of all sankhara. And as the Buddha said, see them, be mindful, they are anicca, anatta, dukkha, into the waste paper basket. All right. Then finally, vijnana itself, this discriminative consciousness. It is so significant, so extraordinarily important, that the Buddha said, vijnana itself is anicca, anatta, dukkha. But when he talked of the sunyata phala samadhi and what it meant to live in that state, the abiding, which was the immutable, from which there was no falling away, which is the unshakable state, as it is said, in connection with that, remember the phrase the Buddha uses in other contexts. It comes in the Majjhima, it also comes in the Digha Nikaya. Where is it, the question is, where is it that fire, water, earth, air, etc., etc., do not find footing? Actually, the question is worded in the wrong way. In the Digha by Kevadatta, the question is worded, where do these end? Where do they disappear into? And the Buddha says, don't ask the question that way, but ask, wherein is there no foothold for earth, air, fire, water? Meaning no foothold for that which is relative, which is not the absolute, and which is not the ultimate reality, not the absolute. See? Dukkha. Therefore the source of pain. And the Buddha answers, note very carefully, vijnanam anidassanam anantam sabbato paham. In the one case he uses the word paham, which comes the one Nikaya, and the other Nikaya has papam. The one means accessible everywhere, the other means shining everywhere. Now, vijnana, he uses discriminative consciousness, anidassanam, without any characteristics. Without any characteristics. Therefore, out of the sphere of the measurable, out of the sphere of all limitation. Anantam, endless, therefore beginningless. No proceeding about it. No ending about it. And therefore no mortality about it. The self-subsisting, if you like to use that word, the immortal, the transcendent. You see now why the wise person talks only in terms of negatives in relation to the transcendent. In Christian mysticism too, you find this quite early on, during the first millennium. We can say what God is not, but we can't say what God is. Neti neti of Yajnavalkya in the Upanishads, and so forth. So the Buddha uses that phrase. Discriminative consciousness, characterless, indescribable, nondescript, endless, sabbato, everywhere, accessible or shining. very significant. Everywhere, accessible, shining. Now you think of it. The light in the darkness, and the darkness knew it not. But the one who can take up the cross of dukkha and transmute all dukkha in terms of supreme communion, converts that darkness into pure transparency, and the light within fills it with its plenitude. Enlightenment. So these are some of the tests. Do I fully understand the five groups of grasping? And the same formula goes on. And then again, Sariputta, a monk should consider thus. Are the four applications of mindfulness developed by me? The four applications of mindfulness. The four right efforts, the four bases of psychic power, the five controlling faculties, the five powers, the seven limbs in awakening. Is the Aryan Eightfold Way developed by me? Now, if all these questions can be rightly answered, then indeed you are abiding in that emptiness. And abiding fully in that emptiness. That shunyata, which represents the absolute. The shunyata, which is the unconditional identity of the conditioned and the unconditioned. Don't attempt any concepts there. Concept will never reach there. But in your innermost awareness, you can be lighted up, and that light fills you, and you are silent then.